Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the beyond nicotine experience with its beyond tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, beyond tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TryTAT.com.
Whenever you want. Never miss another show. Stream us live or listen to past podcasts 24/7 at LVSportsNetwork.com. This is Raider Nation Radio 920 AM, KRLV Las Vegas. Broadcasting live from the R&R Studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, it's the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, presented by Tequila Embajador.
Well, football-wise, you know, on the field, he's a tremendous leader. He has an incredible understanding of what we're trying to do on offense. And then we can all see the relationship that him and Greg Olsen have running this offense is really coming to fruition, right? And we hope that that continues. But I think they both need credit when it comes to that. And then off the field, you know, Derek is the voice of the Raiders right now. And the players always want to listen to him. They always go to him. They ask him all kinds of things. I'm developing a relationship with him as going into our fourth year together. And so we can have conversations about a lot of things. But he's a tremendous leader, both on and off the field. Football is real important to him. You can see by the way he plays.
You know, I talked a little bit to Steve Wood about this. You know, when Coach Gruden would walk in a room, all eyes are on him, you know. And when we lost that, someone has to fill that void. And it's not only me, but obviously as the quarterback and leader, I've been here a while. I was like, you know what, I got to take that part of what I do to another level. And some of the stuff I did when, you know, other coaches were here, you know, I would always go over there and talk to Khalil or talk to the, you know, Jelly or the defense and get them going, see Wood, all those guys. And now I'm just trying to do everything I can to encourage, uplift, and motivate our guys to keep going, you know, in every situation. So it's not only me, but I appreciate him saying that.
That was Rich Bisaccia talking about Derek Carr, and then Derek Carr talking about Derek Carr. And the tone and gist of what both were talking about was how Derek Carr has become the face of the Raiders franchise, not just in face and in name, but in action. Derek Carr, over this, really the last couple of years, but certainly in the face of adversity this year, has stepped up as the leader that this team needs and has, in a lot of ways, put this team on his shoulders. He's got a lot of help, and I think that that's the key to everything. But when it comes to the leader of this franchise, there's no question that it's Derek Carr, along with some other people right below him. But Derek Carr is the top of the pecking order. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador. It is a Tuesday on Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM. And Lincoln, you know, we've all, you know, over the years, we've all been a lot of different places when it comes to Derek Carr. First of all, thank you, Lincoln. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, buddy. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. And, you know, I wanted to talk to you about this today because I think you even said it on the telecast or on the broadcast, I should say, if I remember correctly, that, hey, you know, you said flat out, hey, I've criticized Derek Carr. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you gave it up to him on mm-hmm. Sunday during the broadcast. Mm-hmm. And I always felt like your criticisms were completely valid. Mm-hmm. Where do you stand, first of all, on Derek Carr right now?
Look, I've always thought that Derek Carr was a very capable quarterback. He can make every throw on the football field. Okay, I've always said that. I questioned and criticized a lot of his decision making, whether, you know, when he's running with the football, he goes airborne, or, you know, he sticks it out. He tries to stick it out in front of him. Little things like that have cost him. I mean, there's been times he's fumbled and stuff like that.
Right.
But what has always impressed me the most about his play is his accuracy. His accuracy was spot on Sunday. It was the difference maker. Because there, you know, when you go back to that touchdown of Foster Moreau, there wasn't a lot of space. I mean, Foster had to make the catch off of the player's helmet. There's not a whole lot of space there. So the accuracy was spot on. He decided to take the seam route. It wasn't a back shoulder throw. He threw it up high so far because he knew Foster could see it with the defender's back to him. And he, you know, the defender couldn't make a play on the ball. There was another play not too far longer where he threw, I think it was a little bit of a seam route to Bryan Edwards or a skinny post to Bryan Edwards. And there was no room. The defender was right on top of him. He threw Bryan Edwards open. So his accuracy is what set him apart. And his accuracy was the reason why, you know, they were able to separate themselves from the Eagles very early.
Yeah. And when you talk about the accuracy, this is nothing new. I mean, going back to 2018, 68.9% of his passes completed. 2019, 70.4% of his passes completed. 2020, 67.3% of his passes completed. This year, 67.7% of his passes completed. And that's elite kind of completion percentage right there, number one. And number two, over the last couple of years, and it's definitely carried over into this season, a lot of those, you know, or a good share, a good amount of those are long balls. So it's not just dink and dunk. That's anything but. And I know that the criticism of Derek Carr, part of the criticism of Derek Carr has been, well, he checks down and he checks down to the third guy and easy completion, dump it off. That's not happening this year. He's throwing the ball downfield. He's stretching it. He's making all the throws, sideline throws, middle of the field, long balls, screen passes now, which I know that that has delighted you these last couple of weeks. You know, I mean, it's nice to see a little bit of diversity in that regard, and it's been successful. It's been working. But let me ask you something, Lincoln. The last great, very good quarterback, I should say, of the Raiders was, we have to say, Rich Gannon, right? He would be the guy that you would think of. Okay, do you know how old he was when he came to the Raiders?
Not off the top of my head, but I know he was
34 years old.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. And I want to ask you this. If you could remember back then and remember what your thoughts of, or, you know, of Rich Gannon, because he played a long time before he got to the Raiders, and he was okay, you know, and he was getting better. There were some things that he was doing better. I think he was also not playing on great teams. That happens sometimes as well. But everyone kind of forgets how old he was when he got to the Raiders and was a finished product by that point. But what were your thoughts of, like, Rich Gannon leading up to when he got to the Raiders?
Well, look, I always thought Rich Gannon was a journeyman. I mean, he gave us fits when he played for Kansas City. I think we played him once when he played for Minnesota, maybe. He was always a capable quarterback. And he was one of those things where you sat around and you wonder, like, why didn't he get a fair shake? Because I thought Rich Gannon was better than Elvis Gerbach, and I remember the Kansas City days, you know what I mean? But it was what it was. Rich, I tell you what, I had criticism of Rich too when he first came over. The fact that he would always run, and you know, as an offensive lineman, we're like, dude, don't go anywhere because I can't protect you down the field. But I think it was a Jet game. I'm trying to remember specifically when he won me over. There was a game where he hurt his finger. He like either broke a finger, dislocated or something like that, a finger in his non-throwing hand, and on a play. But long story short, he led a game-winning drive more with his legs than with his arms down the field, and we ended up beating the Jets. And I said, you know, from that point on, I was like, man, this kid's a gutsy guy. He's taking every opportunity he can to make the best of his chance. And then, so that's when I bought in. But, you know, Rich was, once I got used to Rich's play and the way that was, is I had an internal clock that would go in my head. It was, you know, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. At three Mississippi, if I did not see the ball somewhere downfield, I knew Rich was running.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you got that sort of familiarity with him. But, you know, Rich was one of those quarterbacks that didn't have a terribly strong arm. But what we did with Gruden's offense, and this is where I learned it, Gruden always gave him an option somewhere to go with the football.
Right.
He didn't have to hold on too long. And Derek has used that. I mean, Derek has used that sometimes to a fault. You know, where I've criticized him in the past was when, you know, it'd be like 3rd and 15 and you throw a three-yard check down. How is that going to get you the first down? You see what I'm saying? And things like that. Or when he was scrambling, there's certain games where he threw it in the ground. That doesn't do you any good, you know, try to make a play here.
And I always wondered, you know, when I would see that, okay, is he just giving up on the play or saving, you know, hey, punt it, go play, put it in the hands of your defense for, because, you know, the alternative could be a turnover too, you know? I did feel like there was an element of, in the past, of just a lack of trust that he had in some of the guys that were on this team. And
well, I mean, I think that's probably right. I'm not going to give him a chance for, you know, to create an excuse, but I will say this. I to me, Derek's game changed the day that Indy game happened in Oakland when he broke his ankle. His whole game changed. And in my opinion, it wasn't that he wasn't capable as a quarterback. He just became a little bit more skittish.
But is he skittish now? I mean, do you see a skittish? I don't see any.
No. I will say this, Vinny. The fact that when you watch Derek's game now, what's even more obvious to me is that he has a better understanding of the system,
right,
the players, and the defenses. He does a whole lot more with pre-snap reads this year than he did last year. Understanding that. And you could tell that because when he goes to the line and when you can hear him, okay, we're good. Oh, check. He's seeing those pre-snap reads that all the good quarterbacks have.
Right.
You know what I mean? And he, and understanding his weapons and knowing the offense the way he does has aided him and made him a better quarterback.
I also think he's got better players around him.
Well, no, true. Very true.
Maybe the best players that he's had, collectively of his career. When you talk about the entire package, I don't see many weaknesses on this defense. Okay. I don't think that we've talked about this before, the 85 Chicago Bears. I don't necessarily think that there's anybody going to be that good anymore with the rules the way they are and the games the way it's changed. It's just going to be very hard to be a defense that gives up 9 freaking points a game. I mean, good luck finding that again. Number one. But that defense, to me, when I look at it, do you see many weaknesses on this defense? It's not perfect, but do you see weaknesses glaring? Oh, my gosh. How are you going to cover that up this week like the Raiders have had to do these last couple of years? Is there anything?
I mean, it's a pretty solid defense, and the fact that they've been able to play at a high level under the circumstances and sense where you've had so many changes. I mean, look, when we go back last year, We talked extensively what the weaknesses were. The weaknesses were they couldn't get a rush, right?
Yep.
The weaknesses were Jonathan Abram playing in space. The weaknesses were, you know, didn't really look like everyone understood how the defense performed. Linebackers were an issue. So they've addressed all of that top to bottom. Now they've got a consistent pass rush. They've got players that are making waves on the line. Then you've got linebackers that are playing well. Now you've got secondaries playing well. Jonathan Abram is no longer in space and put in and made a liability. He's actually an asset. Exactly right. So, you know, these things have all come together and they've got a system in place where they all seem to be thriving at.
Okay, so check off defense. That's been taken care of now. So best defense, I would say, in a long time for the Raiders. And maybe I don't remember what the 16 defense looked like. I wasn't here. But from talking to people, it seems like this might be a better defense. It might not force as many turnovers as that 16. That sounded like 16 was kind of an opportunistic defense.
Well, yeah, 16 was an opportunistic defense. The offense was just a lot better. I mean, not a lot better than it is now. The offense was efficient. They were scoring. I mean, Derek was playing well. He was on his way probably to be in consideration for the MVP.
Right. Which I think is the case again this year.
Oh, no, I definitely think it's the case again.
All right, so he's got a good defense. Let's just say compared to the last 4 years, all right? Got a much better defense, all right? Skill positions, Darren Waller, Hunter Renfro, Foster Moreau.
Without a doubt.
Right?
A lot more weapons, absolutely.
Even more so than last year because you see what Henry Ruggs now, the better player that he is, and Bryan Edwards being implemented into it and going into his second year. So I think across the board, the weapons, in the pass game, just better.
Right.
The run game hasn't quite been there, but I think that it's a work in progress, and I think it's moving in the right direction, especially with this offensive line. We're going to get to that in a second. And then kind of the two-headed deal that they got with Kenyon Drake now emerging and Josh Jacobs when he can stay as healthy. So, you know, balance-wise, weaponry-wise, Derek Carr's understanding of the offense, this being the fourth year of this offense, maybe the best offense that he's played with during his career here with the Raiders.
Yeah.
Possibly, right?
Yeah.
All right, so you have a quarterback that's playing on the top of his game, and I give him a lot of credit, but I also feel like we're seeing what he's capable of doing, and this is the case for a lot of quarterbacks. You could put Matthew Stafford in that category. You could also put Patrick Mahomes in that category right now, because the reverse is happening in Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes all of a sudden is playing like a human being, not a guy that you go in PlayStation and play quarterback and have him elevated over everybody else. It's not a freak show anymore in Kansas City. He's playing like a human being. It's not because he forgot how to play quarterback or is a worse quarterback than he was the year before this and the year before that. I just don't think he's got the talent around him now, from the offensive line to the skill players. The defense is terrible. So it works like that, where you put a quarterback, a good quarterback, on a good team, and everybody's play is going to be elevated as a result. So this is where I'm at. Is he playing the best football of his career, or is this just the kind of a combination of him being a very good quarterback on what looks to be a really good football team?
I think that based on all those intangibles you said, even coming from 4 years ago, or whatever, 16, if we're referring to that year, then the MVP year, that yes, he's most comfortable back there because he has a complete understanding of the weapons that he has at his disposal and the team that's around him. And look, even, for what it's worth, he knows that he can be aggressive at times, take chances at times, and because he knows he's got a defense that's going to help him, at least slow him down. He doesn't have to feel compelled to score a touchdown. You can go down and drive down the field now and play for a field goal.
Right.
You couldn't do that last year.
When could you ever do that, right?
That's exactly right.
I mean, look at Lincoln, the last two games, all right, and we're going to flip it back to the defense, which you just astutely mentioned. First opening drive touchdowns, they give up to the Denver Broncos, they give up to the Philadelphia Eagles to start the game, all right? But then it's not until the third quarter that either team even got close to scoring a point, all right? Right. By the time that happened against the Denver Broncos, the Raiders led 24-7. By the time it happened where the Eagles scored again in the third quarter Sunday, the score was 30-7. So when you have a good defense, like you said, you don't have to score every time, but you keep getting the ball back and keep getting the ball back without giving up, the other team scoring. And all of a sudden, a couple big plays here and there, and all of a sudden you're up big. And it's a luxury that he hasn't had. Look back to last year. The offense scored a whole bunch of points, but was there ever really a blowout except for maybe that Denver game? They never had the luxury of just breathing a little bit easy and saying, well, okay, we've put this thing out of reach by the third quarter. But two straight weeks now, it's happening thanks to a good defense.
Yeah, and that's the thing, that also, the fact that you still have a consistency with special teams,
yeah,
and you're smart with them. I mean, it's a total team effort. I mean, it really is, and it's impressive to see, because, you can only imagine through the turmoil that was possibly in that locker room when everything kind of hit the fan, that the fact they're able to play so well and play together. I mean, I thought it was going to be a hole in the team when Waller wasn't playing.
Right.
You know what I mean? But at the same point in the pregame, I announced and said, who needs to come up big now? You need to find a way to get the ball to everyone else, because you still have weapons. You know what I mean? And just not relying on Darren Waller. But, with their corners, you knew Slay was going to go after Ruggs. You knew that. Or Edwards, one or the other, was going to pick one or the other. But then you had to go to the other one, and that's the great thing about having two wide receivers that can stretch the field. And then you've got Hunter Renfrow. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, how daunting is that for a defense when, the other team's really the best weapon? Darren Waller's not even suited up, and they don't miss a beat, Lincoln. They didn't miss a beat, and I think the ball touched nine different hands.
I read that too. Yeah. And also the fact is that they were able to figure out the ways of the running game and get that to be productive. That also helped. That always helps. A running game is quarterback's best friend when it comes to offense, so that also helped to be able to do that.
All right, so getting back to Derek Carr, is this the best football you've seen him play?
Yes. Yes.
No criticisms? No? Is there anything that he's...
No, I mean, no. Derek has been smart and concise with his play selection most of the time. There are times where I was like, dude, just let the play run. You're overthinking things.
Right. And maybe he was. I mean,
I'd still hold that true, that even though they're successful, I'm still thinking they're the things that he was overthinking. But I also feel that, until he got into the game a little bit more against the Eagles, he was realizing that how that inverted safety was coming down and how they were treating that inverted safety into the box. And then they realized what runs they could go with. That was a process where a quarterback and an offensive coordinator goes over to the sideline and they huddle up and look at the film and they say, okay, they're doing this when we do this and do that and do this, and being able to play off of that. And what I talked about a couple weeks ago is allowing the game plan to mature and to fall and to create a rhythm. Saw it just like in a Denver game. I saw it in the Eagle game. I expect to see it, and from here on out, a rhythm to it. And it's not necessarily predictable with the rhythm, because you have those little nuances that I don't know if Gruden was calling the plays, they would still go. You know, my perfect example is this, is that when they went two backs, okay, when they went two backs, when Alec Ingold came in as the lead fullback, all right?
Right.
What the Eagles did is they brought in an extra lineman and they brought in an extra linebacker. They loaded the box with their normal bare front. When Ingold faked like he was going to ISO on the Will backer and ran around him for that wide open layup pass that Derek threw, that was a progression of the ISO blast runs that they were running. So they were running those ISOs where Alec Ingold's a lead back, goes up to works his way up to the Will backer and blocks him and they hand off the ball. Running off of play action, that Will backer came down thinking he was going to get blocked, tried to take on the girth of the block. Alec Ingold ran around him. If Derek would have put a little bit more air in it, Alec would still be running today.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Know what I mean?
Because
he had to stop and wait for the ball. But, you know, those are one of those instances where you allow the flow of the game to dictate and predict your next play and the next coming, because they totally fooled the Eagles. And it's not like they went back to it again after that because, oh, you know, shame on you. But they made a big impact play and were able to get points out of it. That's the way it should go when you're calling plays.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting too, Lincoln, I know, you know, Derek's been around for a while. It seems like forever. He's only 30 years old.
Right.
He just turned 30, which in today's world is really, you know, 25 almost. Like, he's got a long way to go if he stays healthy and he wants to stay with it. He's got a long way to go. And I think the Raiders at this point might be getting the best version. I think the best version of Derek could be ahead of him. And I say that because I think the best version of the Raiders could be just starting right now. And so when we get back, I want to ask you a key question, because he's only got 1 year left on his contract. So when we return, I'm going to put the question to you, Mr. General Manager. Do you re-sign Derek Carr? Do you extend his contract and take care of it as soon as possible so that it doesn't get way too crazy in terms of the numbers? Because I think he's starting to show that he's going to be around a little while, and he's moving to the top of his game. You're in the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila and Bajada, Raider Nation Radio, 920 a.m. on a Tuesday.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny and Lincoln on the Sam and Ash text line at 69187 or tweet them at Vinny Bonsignore and at LKennedy72. This is In the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
You know, I'm just really going to concentrate on the way we played today, and this was the game that we concentrated on. That last one was over, and certainly that last season's over. So we're excited about the direction we're going in. We're excited about the work we've been getting out of these men in practice, and we'll see what tomorrow brings.
That's the low key, very direct, no BS, no real sound bites. Rich Bisaccia, the interim head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, a little bit of a difference from the previous coach, who was a big personality, but everyone rolls a little bit differently, and that's how Rich rolls, and I think he's doing a good job so far, without question. I mean, you're 2-0, the two best performances, complete performances of the Raiders in probably a long time. I can't remember the last time the Raiders put together two performances like that, back-to-back in all phases of the game. And as Rich Bisaccia talked about, going to focus on maintaining this and moving forward. Forget about what happened yesterday or the day before. It's all about what happens from here on out. And one of the big parts of the Raiders' success these last couple of weeks has been the play of Derek Carr. And it's not like he's playing out of his head so good, like we've never seen this before. I think he's just playing to his capabilities through a combination of things. He's an improved quarterback. He has a better understanding of this offense, a complete understanding of this offense. And he's also got a good team around him. And so It just shows what happens when all of it gets married together. A good defense, good special teams, an improving offensive line, an array of talent around him, a good play caller, good relationship, all of that, good system. And it all is working out right now. And you know, Lincoln, Derek Carr has 1 year left on his contract after this year. And it's at a very team-friendly, I think, $19 million, something around there. But, you know, it's very rare in today's game that a quarterback that's playing this good goes into the last year of his contract. Usually things get taken care of one way or another, where you can kind of read into the future and see where this is all headed. But if you're the Raiders right now and you're Derek Carr, how interested are you in getting things finalized and making this and renewing the vows here with Derek?
Well, I mean, I think it's important that you, okay, there's a couple things you have to sort of process here. And first of all, it starts at the top. It starts at the head coach. If you decide to make a change at head coach, you and I both know most head coaches want to come in and we want to have their own guys, especially their job depends on it and where that is at quarterback. So that's first and foremost.
I mean, if you're any coach right now,
yeah.
If you got the job.
Well, Lincoln, I mean, you know, here's if I got the job, it depends on, you know, what system I want to bring. I mean, I honestly think if you keep things, because you are rolling, of course it depends on how you finish the season, but the way that Derek has a command and the respect in the locker room is invaluable. You look around the league, teams that have consistency at quarterback usually have pretty good success if the quarterback's worth a damn. And I think that's why you wait to the season over. The short answer to your question is yes.
Right.
You do it now because you don't want to lose what has already been established or what you have in the locker room, the cohesiveness, the functionality of the offense, the way that he's been playing, you know, through the first half of the season or for the first seven games. You want to rely on that. And if he finishes as strong as he does right now, I mean, what? He'll go for what? Over, where's he at? 2,500 yards, 2,300
yards? 5,000 yards?
Yeah, 5,000 yards, maybe 6,000 yards if he keeps that way. You know, and the touchdown to interception ratio is going to be high. So, you know, yes, you would like to sign him. You don't want to allow him to dance around that last year because then you get in a situation like the Cowboys did with Dak Prescott, and he's basically telling you what he wants.
Right. Yeah, and if you're, I mean, to your point, if this thing ends the way it is right now, like if it continues on, I should say, the way it is right now, if you're a new coach, if they even go in that direction, we're going to get into that in a second, why would you, I mean, think about the chance that you would be taking as a new head coach if you decided, I'm going to go in a different direction at quarterback, and it didn't work out for a couple of years. Everybody, like, you had a good quarterback. Why would you, you know, move on from Derek Carr playing the best football of his career to start all over? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So whoever comes in here, again, it's predicated on whether or not this continues, and I don't really see any reason why it shouldn't. But, you know, I think that whoever the next person is would probably be, you know, be smart to kind of stick with what.
I mean, to be fair, you know, honestly, if you bring in a new head coach, he's probably going to bring in a new offensive coordinator, right? Or a new defensive coordinator, new personnel, depending on what side of the ball he's most familiar with, right? Isn't that fair to say?
It is, and that, I mean, not to cut you off, but if you're going to start that conversation, let's just say that this thing plays out on a respectable manner, whether it's very, very good or good, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If you're Mark Davis and Mike Mayock, why would you even think about changing? And here's a couple of things to consider. You know, Gus Bradley just got here. You got to figure that he's on a multi-year contract, right?
Right, right.
Which is always guaranteed. You got a contract, you got a contract. You wonder if, you know, why would an owner, whoever that owner might be, take something that's working and tell the staff, okay, we're gonna pay you to leave and go hire some other staff to come in here and pay them, you know, to.
Well, I mean, you're preaching to the choir, Vinny, because I don't want, I mean, the fact that we understood that Gruden got them, the coaches' extensions, the ones that were here, the Olsons, Basaccias, and everyone else,
right.
You know, got them extensions, just leads you to prove that it's probably a smart decision for Mark Davis to keep Basaccias.
Right. Yeah.
And play. And if that's the case, then you've got your coach That's already established. You've got a system that your quarterback has excelled and your team is thriving in. You're winning football games. That's already been established and seen. If you follow the season, throughout the season, the way that it started, and let's say they wind up in the playoffs, and let's say they win a game or make some noise or whatever, you know, then you've had a better season than you did last year. I'm of the mindset, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Right.
You don't need to change it. You see what I'm saying? So it's not like you're seeing a disaster of a season. You're seeing a 5-2 at the bye, you know, which I don't know if anybody looked at our schedule would actually think that we were going to be there, you know, be at that record. And then going forward, you see how the rest of it ends out.
And, you know, here's the other thing. You know, I think you can comfortably, stay with Gus Bradley, because I don't think necessarily, you know, I know that it's tough sometimes to judge a head coach on their first head coaching gig, but I don't get the sense that Gus Bradley is somebody that people are just knocking down the door to go be their head coach. So you're probably fairly safe in holding on to him as your defensive coordinator and not necessarily risking losing him as a head coach, right? So, because he's a very valuable piece in that Raider building.
Certainly.
Above and beyond just what he coordinates, it's the players that he brings in, and we cannot overlook the Brandon Faisons, the Darius Filons, the Damian Squares. Like, I know that those aren't like star players, but they've been competent players on the back end of this roster. That's worth its value in gold. So the guy that's working with the general manager and the scouts to get these type of players, he needs to stay, right? And then you go over to the offensive side of the ball, Greg Olsen. You know, he's not, I don't think anyone's knocking on his door to be a head coach. So a safe bet that he's going to be here, you know, for however long his contract is and however long he wants to be here and you want him here. So he stays intact as your offensive coordinator. We know the relationship that he has with the quarterback and everybody else. And this is a well-oiled machine offensively. It'll probably just get better because you're probably going to invest in some offensive linemen, you know, next year. Right. So that gets better. Just a bunch of young players around your quarterback. And then you have, you know, Rich Bisaccia, who I think gets it and understands, like, I'm in a pretty good position here to be, you know, obviously run the special teams, kind of like what John Harbaugh, I'm sure, still does in Baltimore, be the CEO of the whole thing and set the tone from a leadership perspective and an overall picture perspective, but also just rely on Gus Bradley to do what he does and Greg Olsen to do what he does. And I look at the Baltimore Ravens and I look at John Harbaugh, who came up through the special teams ranks. I was looking at his bio last night. I think he only spent 1 year outside of the special teams world, and that was as a DB's coach for one season. But mostly he's just been a special teams coach and went from that to being a head coach. And I vaguely remember people going, wow, why would you do that? He's a special teams coach. But if you look at his operation in Baltimore, he always hires a pretty strong defensive coordinator and a strong offensive coordinator and lets them kind of be the head coaches of their side of the ball, much like Bisaccia seems to be comfortable with what he's doing. And it's a recipe for success. It's worked before, and it could work here.
And look, I agree with you. I like special teams coaches as head coaches. Look, I believe a head coach should be a game manager most of all. And when you're involved with one side of the ball or the other, like, you know, that instance I talked about last segment where Greg Olsen and Derek were able to get together, I think that if it's John Gruden calling the plays, then it's a much different conversation. And Gruden has to be up front watching the rest of the game. You see what I'm saying?
Match.
And so I think that a special teams coach, because now he's equally important, don't get me wrong, especially when they call him the special teams, but a game manager should know how to, one, run the clock. A game manager should know when to punt or when to go for it or when to call, you know, call for a field goal. I mean, whatever. That's a true game manager. That, to me, is what a head coach is.
Right.
Allow the coordinators to do their job and run their specific, you know, positions, why you have your position coaches out there and everything else. Much like you see, like, Ron Miles addressing the defensive backs when they're out on the field. Mm-hmm. Or you see, you know, Gus Bradley talking to the linebackers, getting them, you know, Denzel Perryman and getting those guys lined up right. And, you know, Max Crosby is the leader of the team on the defensive line and everything else. And so you see all that. You see those coaches doing their position. Or when you see over the sideline, Cable's addressing the offensive line. You know, Greg Olsen's with the, you know, the quarterbacks. And you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
the game manager is out front in front of the watching the field, watching the game on the sideline because there's always action. Even while those guys are back there conversating, there's always action. That's why I believe, you know, when you talk about Mike Tomlin, you talk about about Harbaugh, and you even talk about the guy we're going to play against next, you know, the
New York Giants. Yeah.
Yeah, New York Giants. I forgot the coach's name.
Me too.
Yeah, gotcha. But you know what I mean. It's I think it's a trend that's I don't mind seeing it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and so you know Rich Bisaccia, and I can't say that I know him, you know, all that well. COVID has really, you know, changed things in that regard. I like what I see so far. I think he's you know, it was funny because the first day we talked to him, personality was coming through. I think the next couple of days we talked to him, he was locked in on the game plan and the game planning. And so we got a little bit less of the personality, but that kind of followed all the way through Sunday. But yesterday when we talked to him, I felt his personality coming back up. And for us, you know, that's what we're looking for because it helps our job, obviously. Not that you can make it work either way. But I think he does have a personality, and I think that will continue to the more comfortable he gets in his position and talking to us and being, you know, that face of the team and CEO, that type of thing. I think more and more of him will come out. But you know him, and so set aside friend Rich Bisaccia and focus on the nuts and bolts of it. And if you're somebody in a power of position, any hesitancy whatsoever to say, okay, you know, with the way this structure is currently, you know, made up, and if that's what's going to, you know, if there's certainty that that's going to continue, any hesitancy to say, I like this guy as the head coach in that kind of a structure with Gus and Greg doing their thing on those.
Not one hesitancy, not the slightest reluctancy. No. I mean, I think that, look, you can't put a price on experience. Someone who's had 30 years in the National Football League, I don't care what you have, that's an experience that's, worth a great deal of value. And then you talk about the compile that what he did on the college level and the programs that he was at. I think he has a great understanding not only of the game, the way it should be played, the way he can be won and successful, but more importantly, the people who are coaching today, because he has a familiarity with a lot of them. You see what I'm saying? So understanding, much like Gruden is, you know, the football mind, especially on the offensive side, to me, Bisaccia is one who's been able to embrace the entire game, all sides of the ball. I mean, he was a defensive guy in college and stuff like that, became special teams coach, defensive side. So he's been all over the place. That experience is invaluable to me. I wouldn't make a second and say that it wouldn't work. But I do know this, and I've seen it first and foremost. I was watching the Monday Night Football game last night, and they were showing Dennis Allen on the sideline, defensive coordinator for the Saints.
Right.
I thought he was ill-equipped to be the head coach when he was with the Raiders.
Yeah.
I did not agree with anything he did, any of his direction, and I think the team, they showed it because they played like crap. But, you know, the whole thing
was
just fell apart. You know what? I don't think he really knew how to run a team.
Yeah.
So I say that to say this. I believe there are people out there who are better equipped to be coordinators rather than head coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be a lot of people who sit there and say, well, what's the difference? Well, we talked about earlier, I think you got to be a good game manager. And, you know, some people might question Bisaccia's, you know, management in the game when he didn't call a timeout soon enough when they were letting the clock roll down. But I didn't have a problem with it because I knew the position and what they were trying to do.
Right, exactly. Well, when we get into it, we'll talk about, you know, does that make the head coach less important, or you know what I'm saying? Like, like how much as a player did you look to the head coach for guidance? I sometimes think that gets a little bit overplayed, but we'll talk about it when we get back. You're in the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM on a Tuesday.
You're listening to Raider Nation Radio 920 AM. Now back to your hosts, Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy.
I don't see a vacuum of leadership, okay? And I want to be really clear about that. Rich Bisaccia is the best leader I've ever been around, okay? The players respect and love Rich Bisaccia. So from that perspective, he and I are all in together on this. 100%. Okay? We're 3-2. And so any kind of conversation about what we're going to do after the season, to me, is premature. You're going to let this season play out. We're going to see what happens. And I'm going to back this son of a gun unequivocally.
That was Mike Mayock 2 weeks ago, almost to the day, really. 13 days ago, to be precise. By the way, you're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy. Brought to you by Tequila Embajador. It's Raider Nation Radio, 920 a.m. on a Tuesday. We've got Lincoln Kennedy with us here. Lincoln, that was 13 days ago in the eye of the – or excuse me, 15 days ago. In the eye of the storm, right? Mm-hmm. Wow, what was going on? What was going to happen? People were already looking to 2022. Who's going to be the head coach? Who's going to replace, you know, John Gruden? And Mike Mayock said, whoa. There's no power void here. There's no leadership void here. Everything that the Raiders need to win is in place in this locker room, in this building, and we're going to see this thing through. This isn't a bad team that lost a coach for bad reasons because he couldn't get the job done on the field. This is a good football team with all its goals and objectives right in front of them. And he made it clear that that was the case. This wasn't step back, evaluate, let's see where we are at the end of the year, hope for the best. No. The playoffs are still the goal. This is still a playoff team. We lost our coach because of a weird situation, not because the team is bad. And that's what we're going to focus on. Well, 2 weeks later, Lincoln, this football team is 5-2 atop the AFC standings. They've got a fairly favorable schedule coming up, at least right out of the bye. They're going to be able to get healthy. And as Mike Mayock said, no leadership void here. And I think we saw what he was talking about in the way this team has played these last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I agree with him. You know, where you as the general manager, you got to come out and say, you know what? I know there's a lot of questions that are being surrounded, you know, to this team right now, especially early in the season after the head coach stepping down. And of course, how high of an impact he had on the team in general and everything. His hand was in every part of it.
Yep.
And where do you go from here? So I understand the questions, where they came from. But in respect to what Mayock was like, is like, look, we got to see what we got here. Let's see what we have in the cabinet before we start talking about and projecting something else.
Yeah, exactly. And so getting back to, you know, it's the bye week, so we don't have a game to talk about necessarily. We just had to, we're talking about how good the Raiders have played, and why would you break it up at this point if it kind of continues on this path? You know, when you talk about Rich Bisaccia and you articulated the reasons why you think it's working, you know, on the field and the day-to-day operation of a football team, there's another side to this, a void that will be felt at a different time, and that was John Gruden's not only talents as a talent evaluator, and we see what he's helped put together here. This is a good roster, and he had a big say in all of that, right? Mm-hmm. He's no longer here to help pick the players, and there's been a little bit of a switch, according to Mark Davis, Mike Mayock, where Mike had 49% of the say previously in player acquisitions. Now he's got 51. Rich Bisaccia, as of right now, has the 49%. So here's where I'm going with that. If you're Rich Bisaccia, are you okay with that kind of a setup moving forward? And, you know, this obviously then gives Mike Mayock a little bit more say in the matter. And I don't think he would abuse it. I think he's a guy that really enjoys the process of sitting down with his coaches at all levels, the defensive coordinator, the secondary coach, on and on and on and on, to get their input, which then helps guide himself and his staff in terms of going to find those type of players. But if you're Rich Bisaccia, whereas John Gruden had final say in everything, he was the authoritative football face of this franchise, that's no longer going to be the case. Where would you stand in that regard if you're Rich Bisaccia? And is that another case of, hey, it's working, I'm cool with it?
Well, I mean, I think that it's a collective mindset depending on what you're talking about. For example, if I'm a special teams coach and you say, you know, my kicker is inaccurate and I need a kicker, then
certainly,
I think you should have some say in it. You know what
yes.
I mean? Overall, on what you have in set, you have a pretty solid roster where you are right
now.
Right, as long as you don't have anybody that wants to rock the boat. Now I heard they let Willie Snead go, right?
Yeah,
because he wanted to be released. He wasn't playing, so you know You don't want anybody who doesn't want to be there in the locker room.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, you're losing a receiver, but he didn't, you know, you saw the development of the other receivers coming along. He's not playing much.
Right.
You don't want to be here? Okay. I don't have a problem if I'm Rich Bisaccia, and I think that the brain trust is a collective trust from amongst the coaches. I believe in my heart that Rich trusts Greg Olsen when it comes to offensive philosophy, and he has an eye, and they've got offensive staff in mind. He trusts his staff. I believe the same thing about the defensive side. He trusts his staff. And so if there's anything that comes up, I don't need that total power. I don't need that over to me. I don't necessarily think it's all that important as long as you have communication. I mean, it's such a small point. If you and I are working together, Vinny, and I come to you and I said, look, I need a shutdown corner because, we're going to play dime defense against this team and they've got four wide receivers that send out. So I need you to find me a corner. Well, you go out and do what you best you can, right? With the time that you have and the money that you allocated without, you know, trying to break a bank.
Right.
And, you know, for example, Desmond Trufant comes in the game Sunday after being recently acquired. He's playing a part of that dime front. You know, Hayward Jr. is off the field. Anyone see that coming?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So there's a collection, there's a mindset there that I think is already in place. I don't have to have final say in order for me to feel comfortable with my position.
And let's go back to John Harbaugh. Who it was? Ozzie.
Ozzie was the general manager. Yeah.
Ozzie Newsome. Mm-hmm. And it was clear cut who had the final say. But I had somebody tell me that it was Brian Billick. All right. Mm-hmm. And Brian Billick worked obviously for Ozzie Newsome. They won a Super Bowl together, and he totally understood that Ozzie had the final say. You know, but he had a seat in the decision making room, and Brian told me he goes, the great thing about Ozzie was we would sit there and have, you know, arguments. Okay, you pick this side, I'll pick this side. This is the guy that I want. That's the guy you want, you know, and let's argue. And it was like, you know, play a game, football right, game, certainly. Basically. You know, and then I would sleep on it, you know, and gosh darn it, I'd come into the office and say, you're right. And then Ozzie would, no, you were right. I, you know, so then we would argue it again. But that's how they got down to that process. But the final say was Ozzie Newsome's, and it was always respected. And I think, believe it still, you know, has been that case there in Baltimore. So again, if you're Rich Bisaccia, and this is what I like so far about him, I think he gets it and he understands that big picture. To your point, I don't need all of the control. You know, Pete Carroll needed all the control to get brought to Seattle from USC, where he had full control. That's what it required him to leave USC to go to the NFL. I need to have final say. That's the only way I'll leave what I've got right here for that. And sometimes if you want that guy, that's what you have to do. That's obviously Mark Davis did with John Gruden to bring him back. You know, he gave him full control. But that's not always the way it is. We've gotten used to it here with the Raiders because John Gruden had that. But if you go to the Rams, Sean McVay doesn't have final say. That's a total collaborative effort between him and Leslie. And most operations sort of work that way. So I don't think it would be an issue, but you know, I'm not in everybody's head either. Egos right. can change. Feelings can change. But short of that, I think it would work in that regard.
Well, I mean, look, the total package that we have right now is two games and they're two wins.
Yeah.
So, you know, it there's really, if you think about it, there's really no reason to change because what's working is working. You know, that's just it. You don't want to get off of what you're doing and think that you're going to be able to pick up and start all over again.
Right.
But no, so, you know, it's working. And like the rest of the season, we'll detail it because when you map out the season, the way they're playing, you know, I think you and I both agree that this is a playoff caliber team.
Yes.
And the AFC is stacked. I'm not saying they're a Super Bowl caliber team, but if they get lucky, they get fortunate, or you know, strike gold at the right time, hey, maybe they make a significant run in the playoffs. They've got it for the most part. They've got a favorable schedule now. It was looking a lot of places was looking like Murderer's Row when I first thought about Indianapolis and I first thought about Cleveland. Now watching them, no, they lost a lot of bite in there. You know, I'm talking about
replaced AFC by the Bengals though.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, that's just it. There's you give and take. Got most of the AFC East out of the way by the North, I should say, by taking care of, you know, Pittsburgh and Baltimore, but you still have, you know, the other ones. So. That's it.
We will see. We'll take a look at that schedule when we get back here in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy. Brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 a.m. on a Tuesday.
Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the Beyond Nicotine experience with its Beyond Tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, Beyond Tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.